Yo, what up, y'all? Welcome back to Amberland. It's been a month. Let's just get right into it. So, today was a good day, Ice Cube. I went to State Farm Arena in the midst of, it was like a horde, like a big mass of people, mostly white. Confused as fuck using MARTA. I forgot that it was the Braves parade today. Shout out to the Atlanta Braves winning the World Series. First time in since 1995. So what, that's 26 years? Shout out to Andrew and Chipper Jones. Actually, the last time I went to a Braves game was the last game at Turner Field. And it was also... Wait, I don't know if it was the last game at Turner Field, but it was... definitely the last game for Chipper Jones, so it could be 2-1, I don't know, but yeah, it was definitely nice to see Turner Field Braves fans and Cobb County Braves fan unite in order to overwhelm the MARTA employees, because they were just like, where do I go? Oh my god, even though everywhere I go and look up is fucking maps that tells me shit. But we're white, you see? We're not used to doing things on our own. Anyways, let me chill. I'm already starting out with a shebang bang, and why not? So, all that to say, I went to the State Farm Arena and became a season ticket holder. Yay! So, I only missed 4 games. So, that's cool. But I would definitely do this again, but early, because I was just lucky that I got the seats that I got, and they are nice, but the ones I really wanted that much further down, actually. So I'm very pleased with what I have, and it's kind of crazy how cheap the tickets ended up being, considering. So yeah, it was like, because there were 37 tickets that pretty much had to be like, yo, I got them, hold them for me, please. Yeah, this is all because so the last time I recorded, the last episode was October 6th, and I'm looking at my notes and it says October 8th, 2021, 3:17 p.m. I was planning on recording again and do a twofer because I was juiced up. And then a lot of shit just started happening. Started doing either shows or, oh yeah, and I just got caught up working out at the gym. And also, I was just trying to figure it all out. But plus, you know, once October 19th hit, that's where I was pretty much. Like, I've been watching every single game since. I got the league pass right like a couple of days before the season started. And I love league pass. You all hear me talk about the shit a few times before. So I don't get ESPN games, but I do get TNT. So it's not, the only thing with the TNT is that you don't get commentary and it's different angles that you choose from, but still, you get to see the games, which is all I care about. But these motherfuckers done, they, and it's not just NBA, it's every single sports. I don't know if college do it, but I definitely know pro sports do this shit, where they black out local affiliates. So, but the thing about that is, it's not like how it used to be, you know? It's not like you can catch the Hawks game on TBS or some, or in a basic cable package. It's in a premium package now because it's on Bally. It's called Bally Sports now, as opposed to it being Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports South. It's now Bally. It got bought out, I guess. And, bruh. It was kind of bothering me, I'm not going to lie. There's so many good games. And then, and I have NBA TV too included in the package, in the League Pass package. And they had an NBA TV game on and they weren't going to show this shit. I was like, what the fuck? Why can't you show it on this at least? So I basically became a season ticket holder just so I can watch that fucking shit in person. Because I was just going to, like, buy, like, some games that I wanted to see, just see in person, especially the Hornets, because that's coming up soon. But then I saw they had 10 game packages, and I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll check these out. But the games that they had, I wasn't really fucking with. So I ended up, I just ended up going to Hole 37. And shout out to, I won't say her last name, but I will say her first name. Shout out to Larissa, who was my, I guess, season ticket rep. Yeah, she definitely represented really well. She hooked a sister up. So shout out to you, homegirl. You made I got your back like chiropractor for life now, because you hooked me up my very first season ticket, and that's like, I mean, you know, it's pretty much like therapy right now. It's kind of crazy. I'm definitely not replacing it for therapy, but it's fucking therapeutic as shit. It's like so much basketball in my life now, and I get to watch it in person. And the first game I'm seeing is the Bucks, man. So I get to see Mike Budenholzer return to Atlanta, his old stomping grounds, because I really love Mike Budenholzer era Hawks. They were fucking solid. I really, really, really wanted them to win. But whatever. It's cool. He ended up winning last year, but I really want the Hawks to. I mean, all the motherfuckers paid well, so they gonna be there for a minute. And I just feel like they just need one more player. Centers are not as prevalent as they used to be. So, yeah, it's why we have small ball, because we don't have a lot of big men like that anymore. So, but Atlanta really they've always needed one, except for when they had Dikembe Mutombo. So, we just need another Mutombo type. Especially when you got niggas like Rudy Gobert terrorizing the fucking league with his defense. He averaged like 80 rebounds a game. Should be wild. He averaged like 12 blocks a game. He's fucking insane. Really sad I didn't get him in my fantasy squad this year, but it's cool. By the way, my fantasy squad is a little bit better, I feel like, last year. And then I made a couple of tweaks, ended up picking up Seth Curry, got rid of Robin Lopez, and then picked up Al Horford and got rid of someone else. Well, Brook Lopez for Al Horford, and then PJ Washington. I got rid of PJ Washington and got Seth Curry instead, and boy, was that a great upgrade. So, yay. Shout out to my squad. I changed the name. It's King Dames, like King James, but Dames, like Dame Dollar. So King Dames Dollar Holla. Because not only do I have Damian Lillard, I also have LeBron James, who keeps getting fucking hurt. But it's okay, because when he's not hurt, he's doing everything. He's got like 12 more seasons left, dude. And what the fuck is going on? Like, 2 seasons ago, he was averaging literally 10.2 assists in the league. Like 10.2 assists a game and leading the league is what I was trying to say. Cause that shit still blows my mind. I was like, what? And on my fantasy squad, he's listed as small forward, shooting guard, and point guard. I was like, what? But he averaged the fucking league. I mean, he averaged the most assists in the league in 1 year. That's crazy still to me. I think that's amazing. Yeah, shout out to LeBron. I don't understand the hate at all. I don't understand why people be hating on this dude. They have him listed as small forward, power forward, and point guard. It's like, how he skipped the shooting guard? But yeah, It's so crazy how people just hate on LeBron so much, but whatever. He definitely deserves criticism. You know, no one's perfect, but the hate is so weird. It's like, oh, he's not Jordan. It's like, yeah, Jordan's a fuck. Oh, speaking of Jordan, Scottie Pippen is a salty bitch. He's going to always just be so salty. I like Scottie Pippen. Like, I always thought he was a great player. He's one of, and I really struggle with who is my all-time favorite small forward, him or KD. And it's fucking KD now. It was like a draw, but I ended up choosing Scottie Pippen. But fuck that shit. He came for KD, and KD is like, didn't the great Scottie Pippen once sit out because his coach drew a play for a better shooter? And how he fucking rehabbed during the season so he can enjoy his summer. Yeah, KDB. Yeah, he don't always come for it. I'll be talking more about KD later. But anyways, yay. So yay, season tickets. And yay, league pass. And yay, going to the gym on the regular. That has been very helpful. So glad to get back into shape because I was so out of it for the past 3-4 years. And yeah, it just feels good to have time for all the things I enjoy. So, yay! And then I did Girls Night Out a couple of weeks ago. Shout out to Kiana Dancy. She headlined. She killed the fucking stage, man. Everybody killed. I've never had a bad show, man. I've never had a show where I just didn't have killers on the show, you know? I mean, there's been like very, very few. Maybe, I don't even think it's more than 3 comics out of like the many I booked that had like, that bombed, and I don't even think they bombed. It was just they were nervous, but still, I don't consider that a bad set. Going back to the never seen a bad set on Girls Night Out, so it feels great. It really feels great. I'm glad that I got the crowd that I did, in spite of the IG shadow band. It's real. They really do push black creatives. If it's like anything that questions the norm, aka straight white male norm, they're gonna be alert about it, cause Girls Night Out, it's I don't even bother with the paying for ads anymore on Instagram, which it used to help me tremendously, but really didn't. It's not that great. It's I need to figure out a way to. Like, I know Isaac Hayes III has that fan base app where you can monetize your content, but I'm not really, I don't know. I need to figure out more ways to market my shit because I do have good turnouts, but it's because it's a new venue than, it's the newer venue, so it's a venue that most of the people who have come to Girls Night Out, they're not used to it. So, and it's so I'm still trying to get them to get used to this new space. So it's a transition, and just producing shows and doing anything in a pandemic is just gonna be even more challenging. But I'm grateful that come next show is going to be the 6-year anniversary show. I mean, it's really 5, but technically 6 because I started 6 years ago. But when I did the 4-year anniversary, that was the only show I was able to do. So, but the fact that I restarted this year and I did a couple of shows, that helps. So it's more like 5, but it's technically 6 because, I started 6 years. Well, it'll be 6 years in the end of January of next year. So very, very blessed. I thank everyone who's been a part of this journey, doing a show that people like. I didn't think it would go on for so long, and it really does feel good. I mean, let's keep going, man. I haven't run out of comics to book. I mean, it keeps adding, so it's dope. I'm very, very pleased. All right, we're going to go into the spots. So, this is almost, it's like almost a couple of weeks old, but it's still not, this news is still, it's still something to talk about. It's so funny because Urban Meyer was getting scrutinized hard because of that bullshit, really weird, butt grazing video. So, but I bet he was hella relieved when John Gruden's emails from 2011, that was back when he was an analyst for ESPN. He wrote some fucked up emails, man, saying that Damari Smith, his lips are, they look like Michelin tires. Damari Smith is a black man. His lips are not that big, but they are juicy, but they don't look like fucking Michelin tires. You know, that whole stereotype, nigger lips, that type thing. But this fool's like, I don't have a blade of racism in my body. When I was talking about his lips, that goes to how I called, when I call liars rubber lips. But I don't think, it was just like a bunch of bullshit, but he got fired. Ain't nobody fucking with that nigga right now. So, and more reports have been unearthed, like how Keyshawn Johnson said, yeah, I knew he was full of shit and fake when I was playing with him for the Raiders. And then, I mean, no, it wasn't the Raiders, it was the Bucks, because he won that year with him. Anyway, and then, but when Gruden played for, when he coached for the Raiders twice, both times, the population of black players decreased on the team. So, whatever, that guy's always, that dude always just seemed like a fucking sociopath. Same difference, right? What? Sociopath, you know, it's learned behavior. It's pretty much you becoming psychotic through learned behavior, and if you're a psychopath, it's due to a chemical imbalance, from my knowledge. Whatever, look it up if you want. Very interesting research, noticing the difference between a socio and a psychopath. Anyways, so John Gruden's beau. It was just always something off about him. He's like, oh yeah, I'm just this guy. I got a lot of passion. I was like, fuck you, dude, you weird. But I find it interesting that after he got fired, the NFL, no more than a week or so later, implemented a new rule in regards to the Rooney Rule. And if you're not familiar with that, it's based off one of the Rooney niggas who, one of the Mara bitches are named after, you know, the Mara actresses, Kate and Rooney. Rooney's named after both of them. Anyways, Rooney was a Steelers owner or whatever, and he implemented this rule where, in regards to coaching candidates, you have to interview at least one black candidate so you don't be out here looking racist and shit, basically, is what it's about. Just, it saves face. But at the end of the day, they're going to end up wasting that lone black candidate's time, unless you Mike Tomlinson or... I mean, he finally retired, but Marv Hunter? No, what was that guy? Yeah, that's his name, right? From, he was with the Bengals for like 100 seasons. That guy. Romeo Crennel, he never got rehired after, like, he literally witnessed one of his players commit suicide in front of him, so... I don't know if the Kansas City Chiefs felt like he was at fault for that, or he didn't fight hard enough to stop that. I do not know, but we have not. He might be back in the league as a coordinator of some sort. But Mike Singletary, he's back to being a D coordinator, but they didn't give him a chance to be a coach again. I guess because of the whole can't do it, won't do it. I need winners. Vernon Davis never fucked up again. He became he changed up so quick. I forgot that shit was about him. Man, that shit was so funny. Oh, being a Niners fan. Anyways, oh gosh. There's a couple of news items I had on here. I'm like, bitch, this is a month old. So I do want to give a shout out to Candace Parker and crew of the Chicago Sky. They won the WNBA championship in that moment where she spots her daughter in the middle in the crowd and then comes and, you know, hugs her and shit. It's so sweet. She has such a great relationship with her. It's really good to see. Shout out to Candace Parker. But I do want to say, well, she's aware of it, but man, her, because she's also an analyst and she's on NBA TV too now. The blouses she be wearing, I remember one time I watched one where she had like a glittery sweater on and she said, and one of her coworkers said, hey, well, have you seen Twitter? She's like, yeah, she said, they roasted me on Twitter right now, calling me all kinds of Liza Minnelli. Well, she had another one. I saw her recently. She had on a white ruffle shirt. I was like, Jerry Seinfeld, fucking relax. But yeah, she's great. Shout out to her, man. All right, I'm going to take a little pause for my jaws. Yo, yo, yo. Oh, man, I just saw. I'm watching the Hornets and Kings game right now, and I really love the Hornets broadcast team. Eric Collins and Dale Curry. And then Eric Collins, the play-by-play, he was talking about the Kings rookie, Davion Mitchell, who recently won with Baylor the national championship. He just, they were talking about him, and he scored a three while they were talking about it too. But it was just funny. Yo, they always have like these little nuggets of thing, like pockets of fun facts about the players. And the Davion Mitchell's nickname is Off Night because whoever he tends to guard has an off night. And Dale Curry's like, oh, wow, really? Man. And I was like, damn, that's a great fucking nickname. I love it. And speaking of off night, this nigga Dave Chappelle definitely had one when he did his most recent special. It was called The Closer, right? Yeah. Yeah. He actually needed a closer to relieve him and close well. He needed a fucking Johnny Smoltz type nigga. Or what was this guy? Trevor Hoffman. Was that his name? Who was fucking at the San Diego Padres? He's like one of the greatest closers. Anyway, that's who Dave Chappelle needed. It's like, I'm not, look, whatever, all right? I will say this. I don't think trans people and everyone else in the LGBTQIA community, I don't totally understand them being upset and offended and like, yo, I don't even fuck with that nigga. But I feel like a lot of the ones who really are upset didn't watch the full special. They're going off of what's been reported. And I just feel like it was very, I felt like how it was reported. I didn't like how it was reported, basically. It was a little sensationalized. I don't think that. Now, if they said it was offensive, yeah, definitely that. It was definitely an offensive ass fucking thing to watch, for sure. Just like sticks and stones and the other shits. But, bruh, saying that. That this special perpetuated hate speech, that's very unfair. He did say I'm team turf, but it's very clear I don't want to come off as defending Dave Chappelle. It's nothing to defend. I can say though that me watching that, I didn't think he was saying, all right, now don't fuck with them trans niggas after this. Like that, I felt like that's an example of perpetuating hate speech, and none of the sort was ever really, none of the sort was, it came across that way. But if anybody who's queer, non-binary, or trans, anybody, well, you know, if anyone told me, like, who were them, you know, if they said that, yo, I don't fuck with Dave Chappelle, I'd be like, I understand, fuck it, you know. But this nigga's disgruntled as fuck, and I felt like this special was not even that good to be... I just feel like it wasn't that great to evoke such a thing. Like I didn't feel like anything he said was intelligible enough to I felt like he didn't articulate really what he was trying to do. I felt like the time that he did best articulate is when he did talk about his friend who may she rest in peace, but yeah, his trans friend who committed suicide, and that seemed to be the only thing that was thought out, but everything else was just kind of like a hodgepodge of, hey, I'm saying some shit. That's really what Dave Chappelle's been doing. So he got hella buku money to say a bunch of shit, get a lot of shit off his chest, because he was doing stand-up comedy, and then he got to a place where he didn't feel like he needed to do it anymore, and then he went back to needed to do it because he didn't want to do another type Chappelle show situation, and I understood that. But he's a disgruntled ass nigga, so we really don't need to be putting too much weight to what anything he says. Not like that, not anymore. He's disgruntled and hurt, so I'm clearly don't fuck with black women, but that's another story. Alec Baldwin probably does, though. Not the point. So, yeah, Alec Baldwin fucked up. Nobody learned from the fucking Crow and Brandon Lee, so, you know. But someone said that it wasn't a live gun, but it ended up being a live gun. It's a prop gun that he shot on his set of a Western movie. And the director got hurt, but the woman who was the cinematographer, who's also a single mother, she died. So, and film workers, who's already, a lot of the film crew, especially the ones who are unionized or in a union, they have been protesting. Shout out to my homie who works in that field. My heart goes out to y'all because they are protesting work environment, you know, because it's like they don't get breaks and they work like fucking 16 hours and shit. Fuck that. So, well, this set of Alec Baldwin's movie, this was no different. They not only did the workers walk off earlier, it was earlier that day. It was like that morning when workers walked off because of work conditions, because they didn't want to work under these certain conditions like they were doing. And then they weren't, they ended up not getting hotel rooms or some shit like that. Like all kinds of fucked up shit. Like, so, which meant that if they didn't have hotel rooms, they had to fucking truck all the way over to bumfuck, whatever the fuck they were filming, to back to their home in normal metropolitan civilization. So, yeah. So they're already dealing with that shit. Pretty much risking their lives, because if they're driving like that and it's all late at night and early in the morning and they get no sleep, that's a good chance they're gonna fucking fall asleep at the goddamn wheel. That happens. It's very fucking common. A lot of them die because they're so fucking tired going to and fro. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to their jobs, and then they can't even get fucking hotel rooms. They make money. All these films make money. And it's Alec fucking Baldwin. So you know it's Hollywood funded. Fuck. Like, fuck that shit. Fuck him. Fuck them all. Like, and then the worst part about that, aside from the fucking death, what's so shitty when it comes in regards to the film workers, the ones who didn't want to work under that, under those conditions, they were part of a union, so they got kicked to the curb and replaced by non-union workers. Fucking disgusting. Always a motherfucker trying to cut corners, you know? Anyway, let's move into sports. So, the NBA is here. Yay! And the top four MVP player, the top four players in the MVP race in this order: Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, John Morant, and DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan's a baller. And you know what's crazy? His squad is a squad. Like, the Bulls are going to be in the playoffs this year. 100%. They are going to be in the playoffs this year. They got all the motherfuckers. I was surprised they didn't really, I don't know if they made it. I think they got in that play-in, like, they were in the top 10. They did the play-in, or maybe they were 11th. They just missed it. I'm not sure. But you got Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and then you got Vucevic, who's a fucking baller. I mean, they in there. They going to be all right. And Billy Donovan's a good coach, man. He really is. So, I feel like I'm missing one more player on that squad, on the Bulls. I feel like there's another player. Yes. And when I say one, there's two. So I gotta do this again. Yeah, because that's how stacked the Bulls are. Because I get so caught up with those three, then I'm like, oh, there's more. So you got DeMar DeRozan, Vucevic, Zach LaVine, then you got Lonzo Ball, who's out here doing triple dubs, and then off the bench you got fucking Alex Caruso. Like, they are. Oh yeah, and then you got another high flyer in Derek Jones Jr. So yeah, we're going to keep an eye on the Bulls. They're going to be all right. Them motherfuckers in there to win there. And they're definitely in the piece. They're up there, too. They're getting back into their groove, their 2020 finals groove. So it's crazy. The Sixers are dominating the East along with those other two teams I mentioned. It's 1-2-3, Philly, Miami, and Chicago. Ooh, Atlanta's 12th. But that's because everybody's kind of, it's a lot going on, man. Not a lot of teams that you thought would have been doing well, a lot of players you thought would be doing well, they're really not. But that's why it's 82 games in the season. So, but yeah, as far as the MVP race, I mean, it's wild because I just watched the Nets beat the Grizzlies. Yeah, they not the Nets beat the Grizzlies. It was the Wizards that beat the shit out of the Grizzlies, which the Wizards are gonna be good too. But the Nets, they just beat the Pistons. They barely beat the Pistons. Pistons are they could be good, but they keep losing by like 3-4 points. It's like they keep up with these good squads and then they just peter out towards the end. So, yeah, speaking of petering out, goddamn Ben Simmons, man. This dude, I'm not going to question a player when they say that they are tending to their mental health when it comes to their absence. But he's been absent, and I mean, I never really fucked with him. Like, I always saw, like, there was always, like, some vacancy there. Like, it just looked like he didn't care. He just so happened to be good at what he does. I never saw, like, heart there, especially when he was at LSU. But he's doing the same shit now he did then. I mean, he's just been a prima donna. But he very much so could be dealing with mental. Well, yeah, I mean, of course he's dealing with mental health issues right now, because people are talking hella shit about him and questioning him and saying all these things and how he choked in the playoffs and all that. And he clearly had something going on that made him not want to shoot. So, but the Sixers are there fine. Like, they just fined him today because he didn't play in the game yesterday. It was like $360,000. Like, I mean, yeah, he has 4 years in his $140 million contract. But, yeah, somebody got to get rid of him. They just being ridiculous right now. I'm not into it. So, the Suns owner, he's, I guess, the next Sterling, Donald Sterling. So, he's been accused of overseeing a toxic work environment where there's a lot of racism and misogyny involved, and how he will walk around the office or walk around with showing a photo of his wife in a bikini and how she was really good with the toppy, and how he has said the N-words on a few occasions, a few too many times, like multiple occasions, not even a few, but multiple occasions. And there's something that caught, you know, I couldn't help but peep out this one, this paragraph. Server, his name is Robert Sarver, by the way, like server, but with an A, Sarver. So Sarver did acknowledge using the word once many years ago, and this is after he did a statement and saying that I've never used that word. That's such a everything about that word is just disgusting and vile, and oh, not about me and my vocabulary. Then he goes, well, he did acknowledge using the word once many years ago. On one occasion, a player used the N-word to describe the importance of having each other's back, he said through his attorneys. I responded by saying, I wouldn't say nigga. I would say that we're in a foxhole together. An assistant coach approached me a short time after and told me that I shouldn't say the word, even if I were quoting someone else. I immediately apologized and haven't said it ever again. The N-word has never been a part of my vocabulary. Okay, bro. Sure. And then I saw Monty Williams answer a question in a press conference about it, you know, just asking his thoughts on it. And he said, well, he's never exhibited that type of behavior with me. And he said, if he had, I wouldn't be here. So I don't know if that's a defense or I don't know. So, or if it's him like, and that nigga better not show that or I'm out. So but anyways, let's do a timeout. All right, so I'm going to talk about the new Colin Kaepernick miniseries, Calling in Black and White. It's 6 episodes on Netflix. Very fucking good. I didn't think it was going to be that good, but I shouldn't have expected anything less than excellence from Colin, because I'm a big Colin Kaepernick fan. Like, I really became a fan before he even took off with the Kaepernicking. But, and I've mentioned this so many times, if you've been listening since the beginning, you've probably heard this story so many times about how I loved him so much that I got into the Kaepernicking craze because I read the article that inspired that, because I remember even that article then was fucking racist as shit. So, but yeah, I guess, I mean, Colin had always had a chip on his shoulder because people always fucked with him, and it all made sense. But what was great about this miniseries, he didn't make it, it's about him, but it's about the bigger picture that circles around his experiences as a black boy in a white setting, and had to be black by himself. Yeah, he's biracial, but he appears as a black man. And it was pretty hard to watch. Just seeing how, like, he's heavily involved in this project, and he's in the film himself. Like, it's his present self presenting tidbits, like, just, you know, biological tidbits and his opinions and insight of the situation. But as we watch the scenes as his younger self unfold, it's y'all just gotta watch it. But what, so, and just within the first few frames, how that transitions into what he's talking about. And he does a great job talking about the combine. I'm really glad he talked about the combine, because I don't believe in them shits. It's straight up slavery, man. It's auction block. Of course, it's not straight up slavery in the sense that these niggas not playing, they're not working for free, but they're not necessarily free millionaires either. They're not free with their millions. I mean, they can't do shit. They can't even taunt anymore. They can't even be joyous assholes anymore in the end zone. Fuck the NFL, man. But yeah, he does. Colin Kaepernick does a really great segment about colorism and how, because the young girl that he was really into in high school was this beautiful dark skinned girl, but because she was dark skinned, she was immediately dismissed as ugly, and they were calling her burnt. Like, they said she looked burnt. And he does a really great job talking about colorism and the test where these kids, black and white, they look at these dolls of different hue, from pale white to pale light skin black to dark skin, and they unanimously agreed that the darkest skin was the ugliest, the meanest, the baddest, the stupidest. Like, any of the S that are negative, the dark skin got it, because it's just, they don't like how it looks. Shit, stupid as fuck. And I grew up a part of that. I was on the other side. It took me, I'm fucking 37. It took me till I turned like 20. I don't even know. Honestly, yeah, I mean, I didn't start to feel pretty about myself until I was 30, pretty much. Like, and that's why I spent it single. No, my 30s, no. Because, like, I don't know, man. Like, being a victim of colorism, being told my whole life how ugly I was because I'm dark-skinned, being called blackie, ugly, midnight, all the shit. Then in college, you know, people started to see me for who I was, and they started to see that, oh, I was beautiful, but I didn't believe them niggas, so I didn't trust them. And then I was in a relationship for a few years, like some years and years, and the nigga never made me feel beautiful. So so those types of things will make you uphold those opinions about yourself, like, oh yeah, I guess I am ugly. And it, I mean, I'm pretty, like, I'm not a veteran at all at overcoming that shit. Like, I'm still overcoming that. That shit sucks. It's really fucked up that you're told you're ugly just because you're born with dark skin. Like, what the fuck? And I'm not even ugly. Y'all can kick rocks. So yeah, that right there really, like, touched the nerve. Clearly, it was like, damn, man, you really dug deep with this. And he was a ace baseball player who could have been drafted right out of high school with millions and millions of dollars in his pocket, but he chose football, and he didn't even get recruited because of his football performance. It's because some Nevada coaches were present, and they remembered that Colin had practiced with them to get a scholarship. They saw how he played on the basketball court, and he threw a long basketball pass. Like, he threw a long court, like, it was like a full court pass from one end to the other, and it was beautiful. And that alone got their attention. It's like, yo, let's try this nigga again. And they did. And then he killed it in Nevada, and then he ended up being drafted by the Niners. And Jim Harbaugh specifically sought out to draft him, and I'm real upset with the Niners forever for them firing Jim Harbaugh, and because that was a really, really great great head coach QB relationship between Harbaugh and Colin Kaepernick. And then once Harbaugh left, Kaepernick, he was alone again. It was like childhood all over again. He was alone, and nobody had his back. And saying? He was already doing his own protests then. Not probably, definitely was in the press conference. I watched every press conference during the Colin Kaepernick era because I was really wanting us to win the Super Bowl. Anyway, so he was always, like, every time he would answer a question, he looked visibly bored, rolled his eyes, shifty, all types of shit. So yeah, it was protest in the making, and then watching that he was like that as a teenager already. They did a great job with that. Shout out to Ava DuVernay as well as because she directed it. And well, she co-created it with Colin, directed the first episode. But Robert Townsend, shout out to him. He did a few episodes on it. So shout out to him. And then yeah, I think that's about it on far as, yeah. Oh, the actors, the white niggas. So yeah, shout out to Nick Offerman, who plays Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec, and then Mary Louise Parker. There we go. She was in Weeds. Yeah, they both killed that shit as his adopted parents. But apparently his adopted parents really weren't about that, supporting, I mean, he wasn't even their first choice. Their first choice definitely wasn't this biracial kid that passed for black. So it was already a challenge for them when they decided to take him. But yeah, if according to this, I mean, Colin Kaepernick has always talked about his parents and, like, said good things about him when he was still playing. But I don't know how he feels about him now. I don't know. But he's, I doubt he wants to get back into the NFL. I don't think he does. Why should he? Fuck him. And then this whole black quarterback thing. I talked about this shit a couple of years ago to two people, and both of them gaslit the shit out of me, saying, oh, no, you're just, they're like, no, it's not like that at all. And it started because of Colin Kaepernick. You know, he got injured because defenses figured him out, so to speak. And so I read this great article from The Undefeated, and anything from The Undefeated is pretty much great. Because it's definitely sports content created by black people, black sports reporters. And so this guy wrote, figure out Kenosha quarterback skill set as out. This is all about based off Lamar Jackson and how there's been certain words been tossed around about him from coaches. And it's definitely in code. They definitely speak. You know, white people always speak in code. So the whole figure out situation, it connotes the quarterback skill is set as sophomore gimmickry that is easy to adapt to once a head coach or coordinator, likely white, studies it enough. Oh, this nigger likes to run. That's pretty much it. It assumes the quarterback and his coaches is incapable of figuring out what the defense have figured out. Yeah. Right. That's a great fucking sentence. It posits that mobile quarterbacks are one-trick ponies It posits that mobile quarterbacks are one-trick ponies who, when forced to throw the ball, certainly turn into running backs who happen to throw a tight spiral. I'm just so happy I need it, you know. And if it was me, you know, still on my sports writer path, I would have written this story, but I just did not. I'm still not there because journalists don't get paid enough. But yeah, it's something that I've been working on, you know, on my own, just for my own, like, talking points. But this article is basically what I've been, this is the data that I've collected pretty much. And I'm like, and it upset me because I'm like, I know I'm not wrong on this. I'm not trying to prove myself right. It's just that I know I'm not wrong about how black quarterbacks are viewed in the fucking NFL along with NCAA. NCAA work hard to make them other positions. Oh, we'll transition you into a wide receiver. Oh, we'll transition you into a D-back. Oh, you'll be a cornerback in no time. Fuck out of here. So back to the article. It's long been established that black quarterbacks are treated differently, whether by fans, the media, or the league itself. Their intelligence and character are constantly questioned, down to the fact that only within the last 10 years are we regularly seeing more than a handful of African Americans being allowed to start at the position in the NFL. But in those rare instances in which a black quarterback is handed the reins to the offense, his style of play, which, save for a few examples, is normally predicated on mobility. Is considered bastardized and amateurish compared with the more traditional read white quarterbacks. And what made me come up with this, I mean, my first time bringing this up about black quarterbacks and how they're treated and all this, especially on the traditional white quarterbacks, as much as I've been watching and listening to football, I never heard so much emphasis on the pocket. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention then. But I just never heard so much emphasis on, oh, the pocket. He throws from the pocket, the pocket, the pocket, the pocket. And I know that commentators got especially obsessed with talking about emphasizing the pocket. They got pretty emphatic about it when Colin Kaepernick when he was killing the league. Because he was fucking running, like, he was rushing. He still has the most rushing. He still has the most rushing yards for a QB, especially in one game. I think he did like 161 in one game or some shit. Yeah, like, I forgot all the stats now because a bitch be high, but I just remember him running for like a 72-yard football, a 72-yard touchdown. And that was when he did Kaepernick. But yeah, that shit was great. I mean, just watching him, he was super mobile and agile. He really was. But he threw gunners. Like, he threw, like, he threw fucking 80, 100-yard passes type shit. Like, so did Michael Vick, but he's always remembered for his mobility. So, yeah, when they start below the pocket is like, yeah, them white QBs stay in them shits, the pocket, because they all have 40 times, slow niggas. There's a reason a video of quarterback Deshaun Watson, this is still on this article, there's a reason a video of Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson explaining coverages 2 seasons ago went viral on the internet. Watson, who is black and mobile, wasn't expected to understand what he was seeing on the field. If it were Peyton Manning giving that same explanation, it would have just been another day. It's been known for 20 years that Tom Brady struggles against a disruptive pass rush, and yet defenses figured him out to the tune of 7 Super Bowl trophies. These lies have all the same purpose, to make white people feel comfortable. When white people are comfortable, they are complacent and less likely to demand change. And because maintaining the status quo benefits them, feeling comfortable is one of the few white privileges that actually perpetuates inequality. So, yes. It's very important to talk about this shit in sports, because if there's one area that is huge in America where they like to pretend that race is not an issue, race does not matter, it's fucking bullshit malarkey. Because you have nothing but white men owning these teams, but the large majority of the players playing are fucking black as shit. unless you're in the NHL and NASCAR. But when it comes to baseball, it's a pretty large chunk of population of Black people and Hispanic and Latinx people. So, but still, hello. That's white people in baseball too, though. But still, it's like when it comes to football and basketball, though, huge fucking disparity. Ugh, so annoying. So yeah, I highly, highly, highly recommend that was really trippy. Man, Mac is just, them niggas own everything. Sorry, I have my phone silent, but yet I still heard my text message go off, and the text popped up on my computer screen. I'm like, what the fuck? Anyway. Oh, Mac, you cheeky mugs. But yeah, fuck the NFL still. I went to the Falcons game, and I'm like, you know, I don't really fuck with the NFL still. And watching the Colin Kaepernick mini series, that solidified it for me. So I'm a goodie. All right. We are going to finish strong, baby. Going to the overtime. All right, baby, we're going to end this on a strong note, because why not? I've never been one to end on a weak note. Anyway, I did see Dune. That was cool. Didn't think I would actually like that shit, let alone watch it, because I remember, when David Lynch directed it, I was just being born, but I remember. So, being a film studies student, you're gonna learn about David Lynch, and I mean who's gonna tell him, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, I've tried to get into his shit and I'm like, all right man, cool bro, I get it, you got a vision that's different than others, got it. But I never will. I tried to watch Eraserhead and I was like, fuck this. I did see Elephant Man, but then it got too sad. So yeah, that's the extent of my David Lynch history. I just don't fuck with people with that last name. It's not his fault, but fuck that last name. I ain't into it. So, but yeah, not the point. Point is, I'm assuming it's Denis, but it could be Dennis. Denis Villeneuve. I probably pronounced his name all wrong. But the French-Canadian director who did Prisoners and Arrival and the Blade Runner reboot, and then this one, Dune. It's, I don't know what the fuck it's about, but it was cool as shit. I ain't gonna lie. I mean, I know it's about, but I don't know what it's about, you know? So, I know, I think the moral of the story is side hoe pussy breeds demigods. I don't know. I just feel like that's the point of the goddamn story. That was also the point of the plot of Immortals. So, ladies, just be part-time lovers. It's okay. No, I'm just... But was that not the point? I don't know. I mean, the nigga was like, I should have married you. I was like, damn. Everybody chumping each other off and shit, and their own little language. It's like everybody just talking shit. Like that, the movie. I mean, I'm laughing most of the time. Everybody talking shit. You got old girl. You got Zendaya saying, "Yo, it'll be an honor to watch you die from this knife that your mom gifted you." Like, goddamn. And then he fucking kills a black dude with it instead, and she's like, oh wait, I don't think that's a spoiler, because the movie is over 2 hours, so and you're not gonna remember most of everything you watch because it's so fucking cool to see. You're not gonna remember any dialogue, so even though I did, but I'm a words bitch, so but yeah. The movie's cool, you know. Just do some shrooms, man. Watch that shit. You'll have a good time. And the thing about Timothée Chalamet, go you, bro. Got a fucking wine brand name. So the French Dispatch by Wes Anderson was supposed to come out last year, but because of COVID, it came out this year. So Lil Buddy had two shows. Lil Buddy had two films open in the same weekend. Shout out to you, dude. So, yay. I mean, I recommend it, I guess, like I said, but, you know, don't feel bad if you don't know what the fuck just happened when you watch it. This was, it's totally random, but listen to my workout mixes. I discovered the Project Pat's Choose You, and I was like, holy shit. Granted, I don't think this was the original. I don't think DJ Paul and Juicy J was the originators of this sample, but it's the same sample that is used for International's Player Anthem. And seriously, and I never like told anyone this because I would never complain, but like, you know, this is what, for 14 years I was wondering why 3-6 was in the video. I was like, that's so, I was like, oh, hey, look at 3-6, man, they cool. And I just assumed that they were there because of UGK, because they, you know, they boys and shit, and they did songs together. No, it's because they produced that shit. I'm like, wait a minute, what the fuck is happening? Because, yeah, because my brother, this album I didn't get to hear. So I'm telling you, man, before streaming, before Spotify and all that shit, your ass had to not be Poe like my family was to be able to hear fucking any music. You had to buy that shit. You can't just be like, oh, okay. The only time I ever got off was those CDs for a penny type shit. So yeah, they actually worked in my favor. I had a whole lot of, I got some good CDs from those. But yeah, man, I was like, what the fuck? Been discovering a lot of really great gems that I haven't heard my childhood because I didn't have the albums. My best cardio, Kanye's new workout plan, C-Murder, fuck them other niggas because I'm down for my niggas. I always end strong when Trillville Some Cut comes on, or if I'm doing like a really, really long stretch on the elliptical, I like to end on Get It Shawty by Lloyd. So yeah. Oh man, a great way to start my cardio workout. Don't stop, pop that pussy, let me see that dude, that doo-doo brown. I wanna rock. Anyway, yeah, that really sends me up. And then when I wanna like keep the momentum but kind of cool down a bit, percolator. I feel like I wanna, like each episode now, I wanna do a workout playlist. I'm that person now. I don't eat breads and cheese anymore. I don't bake. I'm just out here living righteously. No. But yeah, I am considering doing live streams at the games now that I'll be there. Man, I mean, the first game, fucking Giannis and them, it's gonna be fucking dope, man. I'm really excited. I think that's a good way to end, yeah? Talking about some good shit. I'm real glad that it feels good to be in front of a mic because the Girls Night Out show, that was the last time I did any type of performance. And it's just been a lot going on. It's really been a lot going on. For those who are aware, there's been, you know, some news that rocked the Edgewood community. If you know, you know. So praying for recovery there. Y'all take care of each other, man. And also, like, talk shit out first. Like, don't be so... I mean, we don't really need to be aggressive about shit, man. We can really talk shit out. It'll be all right. I promise you. All right, much love to y'all. Y'all have a great weekend. All right? Enjoy it. Peace.